Yeah, so a bit of a rerun of one that I did last year with a little bit of context to try and fit in with the current theme. So you may remember that the theme for the year is awakening the heart in a suffering world, and particularly the first third of the year we're also focusing on the Buddha. So the Buddha in terms of awakened awareness, awakened heart, enlightened awareness. The ideal of enlightenment to which we aspire, that's a bit of a jewel for us. The particular theme that I'm looking at, which is a sort of a rerun of something I did later in the year last year, is around introducing a visual image into meditation. So it's a relationship of visual image to meditation. So it's not something that we're particularly introducing in the introductory courses, but it does tend to be a feature of the mindfulness of breathing. Sorry, it does tend to be a feature of the metta-bhavana as a technique. But it's more particularly associated with spiritual rebirth practices. So just to remind you of our system of practice, we tend to sort of associate meditation practices with a particular aspect of these five aspects of system of practice. So we'll tend to associate mindfulness with integration and metta, positive emotion. And visualization tends to get associated with spiritual rebirth, along with, in particular, the practice of puja you'll be familiar with, the practice of tonglen some of you might be familiar with, tend to be associated with that, just sitting with spiritual receptivity. However, hold very loosely to any association of a particular practice with a particular aspect, okay? Because these are just five aspects of aspects of practice generally. In this context, particularly aspects of meditation practice. So any one meditation practice can draw on and deepen into and involve any or all of these five aspects. So what I'm going to do today is talk a bit about particularly the space between spiritual death and spiritual rebirth, and then introduce visualization in the sense of engaging with visual image in meditation in relation to that. So this is just one take on visualization. I'm not trying to present a definitive meaning. I'm just presenting something that hopefully you'll be able to engage with and connect with and find useful in practice. There are other ways of relating to the material. Okay. Hi, Sam. Come on in. Get yourself a chair. As you go there, you can join us. Yeah, okay, so I'll dive in. Sam will join us in a minute. Spiritual death, spiritual rebirth, they're natural counterparts, just in the same way that going forth, going for refuge are natural counterparts. There's a movement. Any movement, there's a movement towards, but there's also a movement away. So spiritual death and spiritual rebirth, so you can think of spiritual death as recognizing, seeing the absence of what's not there, what's never been there, anything permanent, anything substantial, anything that's that you can really identify with as yourself. Spiritual rebirth as seeing both the present and the nature of what is there. So it's not that there's nothing, it's just that experience isn't quite the way we tend to assume it is. So there's a sort of letting go, seeing through. Well, actually, it's not there. Seeing what's not there is not there. But there's also a moving into seeing both the presence and the quality of what actually is present. So we can loosely refer to that as conditioned experience, conditioned existence. So this is all around the theme of conditionality as well. And conditionality has been described as a middle way between a belief in existence and a belief in non-existence. So there's a really classic sutta in the Pali Canon called the Kacchana Sutta. I'll just read the sort of nub bit of that, the nub stanza. And the Buddha's saying, "The world, for the most part, holds to a belief in existence or a belief in non-existence. But for those who see the cessation of things as it really is, a belief in existence falls away. And for those who see the arising of things as it really is, a belief in non-existence falls away. Now, I did notice on Sangha Night last week there was quite a lot of talk of impermanence, and I think every single example people gave of impermanence was one of cessation, particularly cessation and death. So the pitfall of that is that you're not seeing the arising of things as it really is, and so this belief in non-existence tends to take root and you wind up in a sort of nihilistic view, which is not the middle way. So similarly, look out for an overemphasis on spiritual death in that way, you know, particularly if there's an emphasis on cessation. So spiritual death, yeah, it's a falling away of a belief in the existence of anything permanent or substantial. Yeah. And that leads you straight into spiritual rebirth, the appreciation of the nature of what does arise. Yeah. So that's a real appreciation of the arising of things. And it's quite different from nihilism, from this belief in non-existence. So conditionality, paticca samuppada, is the sort of label for the middle way, really. And there's a little formula which is a way of describing conditionality, and it goes like this. This being that becomes, from the arising of this that arises, this not being that does not become, from the cessation of this that ceases. Yeah. So again, very equal weight on both sides. So in relation to spiritual death, in particular, you know, this not being that does not become. So when self-delusion, self-cherishing and self-pride are not there, then self-view does not arise. This not being that does not become. Atmadrishti, self-view, not becoming. So that's a sort of falling away of self-view. But when that happens, you see the nature of what does arise, from the arising of this that arises. And there's a lovely little phrase from Buddha Ghosha. Funnily enough, Buddha Ghosha is a famous Sri Lankan commentator on the Pali canon tradition. But this quote is, phenomena alone flow on, cause and component their condition.
Repeat that.
Phenomena. So phenomena take experience, yeah, particular experiences. Phenomena alone flow on, cause and component their condition. They're all conditions, they arise in dependence and causes. When you look at them, they're kind of made up of an array of different textures and aspects and parts and so on, components. Yeah. Phenomena alone flow on, cause and component their condition. Okay, so this is conditioned experience. So one of the basic wrong view that spiritual death is talking about, it tends to be talked about in terms of self-view. But the basic wrong view that's happening, this is using a Yogacara model, that experience comes in, there is experience, and the first thing the mind does, right at the root, the first thing the mind does is it divides it up into this bit's me, that bit's not, yeah? And that's self and world. Yeah? So we talk about self-view, but it's basically a view that divides up the experience up. So you could equally talk about it as world-view. But when the wrong view of self and world as something distinct and disconnected and unrelated falls away, what remains is this flow of conditioned experience. Yeah. There is experience. Yeah. There is this flow of real experience. We can rely on that. It's not just an illusion. So this is tangible, manifest, apparent, visibly present. Yeah. And we're particularly talking about the capacity of the human mind to just perceive experience as it's happening. So I find it helpful to kind of recognise that there are two quite distinct capacities that we have as human beings. We've got this kind of thinking faculty, so we're able to line up a chain of thoughts into a reasoned argument, come to a conclusion. We can do that. That's a real human capacity. And completely independently of that, we've got this capacity to just perceive, sense, experience, and apprehend, know, recognize it to be just as it is. You know. And whether or not thoughts are going on, that capacity to perceive is quite independent of the thinking mind. So it's in that context that I'm talking about experience being tangible, manifest, apparent, present. And it's in that context that we talk about it being vivid and lucid. Yeah. So awareness is said to have this quality of clarity. It's, I find that quite an ambiguous word myself, because I've always tended to associate clarity with a clear line of argument, if you see what I mean, with a sort of more conceptual clarity. But in this context, it means vivid or lucid in the sense of present, manifest, undeniably there. You know, here is experience. In a way, it just cannot be doubted. It's happening. So that's there. We're seeing this flow of experience as tangible, manifest, apparent, vivid, present. And it's all ungraspable, insubstantial, ephemeral. It's both. Yeah. It's tangible, manifest, vivid, present, apparent, arising. It's ungraspable, insubstantial, ephemeral. There's nothing graspable, nothing substantial, nothing permanent in it. So these are both happening at the same time. They're not separate experiences, separate insights, separate practices. Yeah. So we tend to put an emphasis on one, but actually they're not different. So again, this is a way of saying the middle way. The middle way. And I wanted to drop in a description of the middle way from the Yogacara, which might not be so familiar. A lot of what we hear comes either from the early Pali canon, from the earliest records of the Buddha, or it comes from the school of the middle way, the Majjhimaka. But this one comes from the other great Mahayana tradition called the Yogacara, the school of practice. And it's ascribed to Maitreya, which I think is lovely. So this is Maitreya, the next Buddha. This is Maitreya, the most attained Bodhisattva who lives in the two-sitter heaven. And this is what he says. He says, "The unreal imagination exists. Duality does not exist within it. Emptiness does exist within it. And it exists within emptiness." So I'm going to unpack that a bit. I'll just say it again and unpack it a bit by applying it. The unreal imagination exists. Duality does not exist within it. Emptiness does exist within it, and it exists within emptiness. So the duality is this dividing up of experience into this bit's me, that bit's world, this bit's me, that bit's other. And that's just not there in our experience. If you just look at your sense experience that's happening now, you know, just bring your attention to the weight of your torso resting on the chair, yeah, as a physical, tangible sense experience. Is that an experience of the cushion on the chair? Or is that an experience of the compression of the flesh around your sitting bones? Yeah. Is that an experience of self, or is that an experience of world? Yeah. Is there actually a difference? Yeah. Can you find that actual divide between this bit's me, that bit's chair, in your actual sense experience happening now? I'll leave that one as an exercise. So that's the duality. Duality of self and world. Not actually there in the flow of conditioned experience. So what we imagine that here's me living in this world, yeah, is unreal. But the imagination, which is to say our capacity to perceive our experience and to conceive or to imagine a world full of living beings, that does exist. Yeah? So the capacity of the human mind and the human, well, the capacity of human awareness to be present in experience and imagine it to be what we see it to be is real, does exist. So, spiritual death and spiritual rebirth. So spiritual rebirth, seeing the nature, which is the word that usually gets used is emptiness, shunyata, the nature of what does exist. So there's this flow of experience which does exist within emptiness, in the sense that it's empty of anything permanent, empty of anything substantial, but nonetheless there it is, it's really, really tangible, really powerful. Okay. So one last bit of background before we get on to visualization and how that fits in. So this is Yogacara again. They talk of three self-natures. So the first is the unreal imagination, which is this just human experience, human awareness. Here it is, it's real. So that's there, but this duality of self and world which we imagine does not exist within it. Yeah? So there is this unreal imagination. There is this conditioned experience. Yeah? Conditioned experience is, but it's not the way we it appears to be to us. You know? So it might appear to be reliable, enduring, permanent, but it's not really that. So those are the first two natures. There's the existence of the human experience and really imagination. There's the existence of conditioned arising, conditioned phenomena, conditioned experience. And then the perfected nature, the third nature, the nature of the enlightened awareness, the perfected nature is just the complete not seeing of duality in conditioned experience. Okay. So I want to drop in a quote by Bhante Sangharakshita, who he's the founder of this order, Dragon Buddhist order. He's a very prolific author and has written a lot of books on Dharma, but he also led a lot of seminars. There was a point in the seminar in the 70s where he sort of switched from a mode where up until then his principal teaching medium had been lectures. He gave lots and lots of lectures, many of which are constituting the Mitra study courses, 200 CDs worth of it. There was a point around the mid-70s where he switched to seminars. So he'd look at a text and he'd discuss it with a group of order members. And that became his main teaching medium. And they're all transcribed. So this is coming from a transcription of one of the seminars. And he's talking about these three self-natures. Okay, so this is Bhante. Conditioned reality is still there. So this is when you've seen through what's not there. You've seen through the sense of permanence and substantiality. Conditioned reality is still there. You're still eating and drinking and laughing and talking and seeing trees and houses, but you're seeing them in a completely different way. On the one hand, illusion is no longer present because self-centeredness is no longer present. So your perception is no longer distorted. You're no longer seeing the conditioned as permanent and pleasurable and so on. You know you see it as impermanent and painful and all the rest of it. But, as it were, behind the relative reality, behind the conditioned, or as it were, shining through it because your perceptions have been cleansed, as Blake would say, you see the unconditioned, which at the same time is not a separate reality standing behind. Again, language has its limitations. So this takes a bit of getting one's head around. I wanted to drop it in because I think if you're looking for what is our position as Tiratma, if that really interests you, you know, what is our position on what's going on as Tiratma? You know, is it all conditioned? Is there an unconditioned? That sort of thing. I think this is the seminar that nails it, the seminar on the nature of existence. And he's drawing on the Yogacara to sort of describe it. And he's sort of saying that, yes, you're seeing through that sort of false way of seeing experience. You're seeing through any sense of the permanent, the unconditioned. be substantial. You're seeing through all of that. And it's as if something's kind of shining through. Yeah? Something that's kind of, I don't know, goes beyond the light shining through. And in terms of doctrine, that doesn't make sense. But nonetheless, it's as if that's happening. So that's a real description of spiritual rebirth. You see through all of this stuff. And it's not nothing. You're recognising that actually there is experience and this is how it is. And potentially there's some kind of shining through that, you know, which comes from, well, that aspect of reality or experience that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas are symbolising. Okay. So that's my kind of context and background. Again, it's all going to be up on the website, so don't worry about forgetting it too much. I want to go on to talk about visualization in the sense of bringing a visual image into play in meditation practice in relation to that. So visualization practice, it's an expression both of the seeing through what's not there, spiritual death, and of the seeing nature of what is there, spiritual rebirth. Yeah. So you remember I was describing conditioned experience as tangible, manifest, apparent, vivid presence. Yeah. So in that sense, experience is vivid and lucid. So when we introduce a visual form, we're introducing it as vivid, luminous, clear, manifest, apparent, tangible. Yeah, it's tangible in the sense that it's apprehended. Yeah, not in the sense that it's solid, but in the sense that it's tangible. So we're introducing an image that's lucid, luminous, clear, apparent, manifest. It's also diaphanous, ungraspable, made of light. Yeah. And I've put intangible down. We'll have to cross that one out. So I didn't want to say that.
What is diaphanous?
Diaphanous. Well, like something that's like partially transparent, like a very thin cloth. Yeah, like thin muslin or something that's diaphanous. Yeah. So it's sort of the opposite of solid. And it has that quality of ungraspable. Okay. Yeah. So we're introducing a visual image, kind of knowing that, well, all of our experiences are like that. All of our experiences of that nature. Yeah. So we're just introducing a particular experience, so a visual image in the mind. It's of the same nature of all of our other experiences. So I want to take a particular example that you might not think is, you know, diaphanous and ungraspable and made of light. So, holding this chair, okay, here's an experience, you know, a real grip on the base of this chair. So, I tend to sort of associate that as really solid. But what's actually going on? Well, there's a tactile physical sensation. So, I'm perceiving this tactile physical sensation. But I'm not perceiving anything beyond it. Yeah. And that entire sensation's on the surface, it's on the surface of this chair. So I'm not perceiving anything beyond that, anything of the substance inside the chair, the solidity of it. It's just sense experience, just perception. Yeah. So we only ever perceive surfaces. You know, we don't experience what's on the other side of that. You know, I can push down the top of this table, I'm experiencing the surface of the table, but is there actually a table on the other side of that sense experience? Yeah. If there is, I'm not perceiving it. That's not what I'm perceiving. So if there is, it would be imperceptible. And I have this idea that there's a world out there. There's a table on the other side of my tactile experience. And that's fine. That's an idea. So I've got this idea. It's a concept. It's a thought. It's an idea. If there is a thing in itself that idea is pointing to, well, it's different. That would be different from the concept, you know, so it would be inconceivable. So if there is something on the other side of my actual experience, I'm not saying there isn't, but if there is, it will be imperceptible and inconceivable. And so the beliefs I tend to have, that, yeah, that's a table, that's a carpet, that's a wall, this is me. Well, they're beliefs, yeah. And so it's like letting go of those as realities, okay, those are ideas, those beliefs. And we come back to sense perception as we experience. So perception as we experience it, it has this kind of apparentness. But it's illusory in the sense that it's not the way it seems to be. So it seems to be a real thing in itself out there, but that's not actually what I'm experiencing. So, visualization. So we're visualizing things as they are in the sense that we're visualizing them as illusionary experiences. As stars, a lamp, a fault of vision, as dewdrops or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash, a cloud. So you might recognize that phrase. As stars, a lamp, a fault of vision, dewdrops or a bubble, a dream, a lightning flash, a cloud.
Diamond Sutra.
And I think I remember this from last
time.
So see if you can remember where this next quote comes
from. It's only because my partner did talk about it at Goodfield, that's why I know it. So I'm not that, I'm going to put my hands up to that. I'm not at home like reading all the sutras all the time.
So it's illusionary appearance and it's arising in awareness. So awareness, here's a quote, awareness, the primordial purity of the immaculate Dharmakaya, within which all appearances arise like magical illusions. These illusionary appearances are the very nature of the Guru, the inseparability of form and emptiness. So talking about awareness as the primordial purity of the immaculate Dharmakaya, within which all appearances arise like magical illusions. These illusionary appearances are the very nature of the Guru, the inseparability of form and emptiness. So this is a quote from
Padmasambhava, is it?
Very close, actually. It's from the Padmasambhava tradition. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the Guru is Padmasambhava. It's from the Nyingmar Tibetan tradition, where Padmasambhava is very central. And this is from Mipham, who was... he was a connection to one of Bhante's teachers. So Bhante had eight main teachers, one of whom was Yanyang Kensei Rinpoche. Mm. One of his earliest teachers was Mipham, who was a very remarkable figure. He lived around the beginning of the last century, around 1900. And one of his main teachers was Yamyang Kinsey Wangpo, who was a very central figure in the Tibetan tradition in the 19th century, a very integrative, the remade tradition was kind of bringing together many different diverse aspects. So it had a quality that's a bit akin to Chiran. We're very ecumenical. We draw on a lot of different aspects of Buddhism, but we've got our own critique, we've got our own understanding. And so a lot of aspects of Buddhist tradition, Tibetans very much in the forefront. So most of Bhante's main teachers were Tibetans. Yanyang Kensei Rinpoche, one of his connections with Mipham from here. His connection was Yanyang Kensei Wangpo. One of his main teachers was Jimo Lingpo, who's a very famous Tibetan teacher who was said to be a reincarnation of King Khrusong Jetson, who was the king at the time, Padmasambhava. So this Nyingma tradition, it has a sort of connected up lineage that goes certainly back to the time of Padmasambhava in around 800 or so. So what's being said here? Well, to bring it into connection with visualization, when we visualize, we're bringing to mind an illusory experience. Yeah? So within which awareness, within which all appearances arise like magical illusion. So here's this visualizing image we're bringing in. It's appearing like a magical illusion. And we're knowing that all experience arises as appearances, which are illusory in the sense that they don't exist in the way that we tend to assume they do. Yeah? So we're bringing the visual image in, and it's just the same nature as all of our other experience. Then there's this other point, really connecting with the spiritual rebirth. We tend to think of this as practices that connect us with the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. We're knowing this illusory appearance is also the nature of the guru, the nature of the Buddha or the Bodhisattva visual figure that we may well be visualising. Because it's just the nature of experience. It's the nature. If there's a nature of reality, this is it. Yeah. So there's this inseparability of appearance and emptiness, of form and emptiness. That's what we're imaging. That's the nature of the guru. I remember on a Sangha night a long time, probably a year or two ago, there was this question, so what's the connection between the imagery of the shrine and Buddhas and Bodhisattvas? So there's an image, there's a large tanker behind the shrine, which you can see again, which is a large image of Shakyamuni Buddha. What's the connection between that and Shakyamuni Buddha and enlightened awareness? Well, this is the connection. Actually, that image is also, as we see it, an illusionary appearance. And Shakyamuni, as we experience him, is also an illusionary experience. You might experience something kind of really shining through the practice in the way that Vanta described. That also would be inseparably form and emptiness. So the connection is that actually it's all of the same nature. When you get really right down to it, the nature of human existence is the nature of mind, the nature of awareness, the nature of perception. It's all of the same nature. So that's a bit about how visualization fits in here. Okay, so what do we actually do? So a little bit about what we might actually do, and then we'll go to the shrine and do a bit. So in terms of the practice, the first practice of the morning, it's going to be basically just sitting practice, and within that I'm going to drop in a description, a very visual description. So the invitation is just to kind of follow that description and then see if those images arise. Yeah. So we'll start with a broad, open awareness to all experience arising, recognising that everything we perceive is just a perception, just an impression in sense awareness. Yeah. I find that a very straightforward way into what can seem like a very obtruse sort of relationship with experience. But supposing I've just got my eyes open, I'm just taking in visual sense impressions. Yeah. So my mind may well be labelling things and saying table, carpet, wall, ceiling, chair, whatever. If that's happening, that's fine, that can happen. But I can recognise at the same time that what I'm actually experiencing is visual sense impressions. Yeah. So just visual sense impressions arising. That is actually my immediate experience. Yeah. So whether or not we have our eyes open, just kind of receiving. So trying to sort of drop into a purely receiving mode. So if your eyes are open, you're not looking at anything, you're just allowing all the visual impressions to be present. Yeah. Whether they're open or not, any sounds arising, just hearing what's there, not listening to anything in particular, just allowing it all to be there. Recognising it's all sense impression. It's just a sense impression, an impression in sense awareness. Hopefully dropping into a sense of presence, being present to experience. And from that, I'll be dropping in this description, you know, this description of an image. So generally with visualization, it will be an archetypal image of enlightened awareness. And as that image, perhaps that image arises in the mind visually, knowing that to be an appearance. It's just the same nature as all perception, it's an illusory appearance. Knowing also that the Buddha, the Bodhisattva, the Guru, Padmasambhava, whoever it is, it's of the same nature. It's an illusory appearance. It's inseparably form and emptiness. So for this experience, rather than an image of the Buddha, I'm going to drop in a passage from a Mahayana Sutra called the Flower Ornament Sutra. And it's kind of descriptive of this quality of appearances. So that's why I chose it. So what's happening at this point in the sutta is that the Bodhisattva Sudana has just completed his quest and he's arrived at the tower of the adornments of Virochana. So Virochana is the central Buddha of the five Buddha Mandala. And Virochana, he's a curious figure in that he's often not directly depicted as present. It's more like everything is Virochana. When you do get an image of a male figure, Virochana, his cloak might have stars and moons and suns on it. It's like he's a very cosmic figure. It's like he's just everywhere. And in this sutra, it's like he's never actually appears as a single character, but he's kind of everywhere. And in particular, this tower contains the adornments of Virochana, the rich gold jeweled adornments of Virochana. So entering the tower of the adornments of Virochana, which is to say he's entering the realm of reality. In fact, that's the name for this part of the sutra, entering the realm of reality. And then there's this visually descriptive passage. It's very rich in imagery. And that imagery is also conveying directly this quality of appearances as being like magical illusions. Like magical illusions, particularly this quality of there's a way of understanding conditionality that's about interdependence and mutual interpenetration. So you may have heard of the image of Indra's net, which is infinitely large, and at every knot in the net there's a jewel, and all the jewels reflect all the other jewels. You know? So everything reflects everything else. Everything's intimately connected with everything else. And that will be the image. Yeah, so I won't read that now, I'll drop it into the meditation. Okay. So I'll just recap on the what we're doing, just in case you're feeling horribly confused by all this. So what hopefully is very straightforward. In the end, all the practices become very straightforward. Starting with a very broad, open awareness to experience, recognizing that everything we experience is an impression in sense awareness. It's a sense impression. And from that space of receptivity, in which everything is just received, there's no active listening, no active looking, no active investigating. It's just all allow in. I'll drop in this passage, which has got this very rich visual imagery. And open to just following that with an image in the mind. And open to seeing what happens. Yeah. Not trying to make anything happen, just open to allowing what happens to happen. Does that sound understandable enough to engage with as an experiment? Good. Alright then, so let's.
Do you just want to say what happens the rest of the morning?
Yes, let's do that now. Yeah. So after the meditation, we'll have a silent tea break and gather again in the circle and try and kind of make the circle as small as we can, as tight as we can. And we're going to have a group meditation review, which many of you are familiar with, a few of you won't be. But the sort of reference for it is if you've had meditation review on retreat, it's like that, but in the context of a group. So anybody that wants can sort of talk about, go into their current live experience of meditation practice. What's live for you now? You know, not the history of it, but what's current. Maybe not. It might be what's just happened just now in the meditation. It might be just a theme that's live and current at the moment. And then, so I'll sort of engage with that a bit and help you explore it. And there'll be an opportunity for, I don't know, maybe four or five people to do that. And we can learn a lot from each other, from other people's meditation experience. And then we'll have a more open, unled meditation practice to close with. So that's the overall shape of the session. Okay, that's the prompt clear. So let's back away.